Welcome to episode 128 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, author of What, When, Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and jenstevens.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this podcast do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a cup of black coffee, a mug of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast.
Hi, friends. Now, I know most of you are familiar with the power of protein to help us to recompose our bodies, get fitter and leaner by losing body fat and protecting and gaining muscle or lean body mass. Now, protein supplementation is one of the best ways to do it. It is scientifically validated to help us produce high quality weight loss. Now, when it comes to weight loss, traditionally, a lot of people will do high carb, low calorie diets, and those have been shown to generate upwards of 40% lean body mass loss. Now, protecting your lean body mass and your muscle is crucial when you are wanting to lose some fat, because during weight loss, you don't want the weight lost to be coming from your muscle. The more muscle you're able to retain, the more you're retaining metabolically active tissue, which is going to keep your metabolic rate much higher and help you maintain the fat loss after you have achieved it. Now, one of the best ways, as I said, to do this is through using protein shakes. I've been on the lookout for years to find a high quality protein supplement that does not have fillers, dyes, artificial sweeteners, and using cheap protein concentrate, which can cause all kinds of issues like bloating and indigestion. I finally created a protein supplement that meets my standards, and it's something that I personally use every single day, and that is Tone Protein. Tone Protein not only is extremely clean and high quality with only whey protein isolate, no concentrates, no fillers, it is also scientifically formulated to optimize muscle protein synthesis, which is going to help you build lean body mass and muscle in the most efficient way possible. I am so incredibly excited about Tone Protein. Not only is it extremely high quality and optimized to help you recompose your body, it is also absolutely delicious. We've been having so much fun with all the different flavors that we are creating, and I just can't wait for you all to try it. Now, I wanted to create a special launch discount for all of you listeners so that you could check it out, try it out, see how you like it, and test it out for yourself. In order to receive that launch discount, you can head over to toneprotein.com and sign up with your name and email address, and you'll receive an email to double opt in to the list, and you'll be the first to know when Tone Protein is available to order, and you will also receive that exclusive launch discount. It is going to be the biggest discount that we ever offer on Tone Protein, so I really want all of you to be able to receive it. So be sure to go to toneprotein.com, sign up with your name and email, and you'll be double opted in to that list. And I am so excited for you all to try it out. Let me know what you think of it, and let it help you to optimize your body recomposition goals, get that fat loss, and maintain and protect your lean body mass while doing it.
Okay, friends. People often ask me, what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without? And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create a whole supplement line. And that's because I take it every single day, and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version, and it saves you money. If Serapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my MelanieAvalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription. Which, by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we'll put all this information in the show notes. Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 128 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon, and I'm here with Jen Stevens.
Hi, everybody.
And how are you today, Jen?
I am great. Boy, have I had some excitement since the last time I talked to you.
Do tell.
Well, did I mention the moderator retreat that we were getting ready to have on the last episode? I think I did.
I know you did to me. I'm not sure if it was on the episode.
Okay. Well, there were 12 of the moderators that help out in the Delay Don't Deny and the One Meal a Day Facebook groups. And so I wanted to get them together kind of as a thank you. And we've also formed a very tight-knit community, you know, handling all the group business behind the scenes. So we scheduled a moderator retreat. And out of all the moderators that we have, 12 were going to make it for, you know, we had like a week and people were coming for the first part of the week or the middle part of the week or the whole week or the end part of the week. Anyway, it was 12 of us getting together. And the moderator retreat was scheduled for Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Well, what just happened?
Stormy weather a brewing.
Yeah. It was. And so, you know, a couple days, like really like 3 days before everybody was scheduled to start arriving. And, you know, I had just moved into my house on Wednesday. I moved in on Wednesday. Then around Friday, we're like, oh, look, there's a hurricane that might hit the beach. So we're like, oh, no, what are we going to do? So we kept our eye on it. Then when it started to look like they were probably going to evacuate, we're like, all right, what are we going to do? And, you know, people had plane tickets, they had time off work. So we threw some ideas around, we regrouped. I invited everybody to come to my house in Augusta instead. And some of these people I had not met before in person, but I know them like their family. So 10 of the original 12 were able to change their travel plans. It was just amazing. There were people flying into Nashville and carpooling from Nashville to Augusta. Someone drove all the way from St. Louis. We had people changing flight plans to come from, end up in Atlanta and then carpool together from there. So it was pretty incredible. One of the members had to make an emergency, you know, prepare for a crash landing. Her plane did not crash. That was good. And then had to, her flight delayed for 10 hours. Then she had to fly the next day. It was pretty much incredible looking at the dedication of the 10 women that managed to make it. We had such a good bonding experience. You can tell I sound tired. We ended up making it to Myrtle Beach for one night. Me and three of the moderators, we had to go. They were scheduled to fly out of Myrtle Beach. So even though they got here through a different route, they had to get back to Myrtle Beach. So we drove to Myrtle Beach. We spent one night there, had some fabulous meals, and they got to fly out of Myrtle Beach. So, whew, it was quite a week. It was one of the best weeks ever, though. And I just am so grateful that they all were able to change their plans. We missed two people that didn't end up making it, but it was absolutely fabulous. You know, at one point we were all moderating together and approving posts and approving members. And so it was just a great time.
That is crazy. That's a whirlwind, no pun intended.
It was crazy. Oh, and somehow the news got wind that we were here because somebody had posted that we had evacuated from Hurricane Dorian. One of the members was in Charleston. She flew from Canada to Charleston and spent a week there with her kids before she was going to meet up with us. But she had to get out of Charleston right away. So she had to literally evacuate as they were like, you know, she had like 2 more hours to get out. She had to rent a car and drive to Augusta. But we posted about that. And so the news, I guess they were searching for people who had evacuated from Dorian. And they ended up coming to my house with a film crew, filmed us. And remember, I just had moved in on Wednesday. And then people started coming to my house on Monday after that. It was quite a party.
That's insane.
Yeah. Not everybody stayed here. We had an Airbnb that's nearby that I rented, but some people stayed here and some people stayed at the Airbnb. And the very last night, we lost the Airbnb because they had it scheduled for someone else coming in. So there were 8 moderators plus my family under this roof. I mean, people were doubled up. People were on sofas. It was just the best slumber party and probably the most epic housewarming party that anyone's ever had. And at one point, a friend of mine who walks by the house, she's like, I walked by your new house last night. There was some kind of ruckus going on. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry.
That is so funny.
So I don't know what the neighbors think, Lordy. They probably are like, those people are nuts. What is wrong with them? You know, people coming and going up till all hours of the night. We were playing loud music by the pool. So neighbors, I apologize. Anyway, we could not be deterred by hurricanes, airlines, crash landings. None of that deterred us. We got together and it was pretty amazing.
There's a lot there. When the news came, did you talk about intermittent fasting?
Oh, yeah. You know, because they wanted to know why were we all here.
Awesome. That's hysterical.
And I mean, it was random. They didn't know that I was an author and this was my house. And it was they were just like, hey, we heard you had to evacuate. Can we come and film you? We're like, oh, yeah. So while the reporter was here, you could see it in her eyes. She's like, this is going to be a bigger story than I thought.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to go back and look at all these pictures that you posted with this context. That is so funny.
It was just amazing. And the moderators I had never met face to face, you really can get a sense of people from what you learn about them as you interact in an online community. And everyone was just absolutely even more amazing in person than I thought they'd be.
That is amazing. Well, I'm glad it turned out well and crazy.
Well, it was great. I'm exhausted. I'm still trying to recover. I mean, it was a lot. And I'm still not completely unpacked, but I was unpacked enough. So what's up with you?
The new show is going well. So I'm thrilled. Actually, so today a book came out that I've been dying to read. Do you know what that is?
Well, no. What is it?
It's by an author who's also going to be on my new podcast, which I am beyond the moon about. It's David Sinclair and his book, Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. Oh my goodness. I'm so excited. I've never been so excited about a book, I don't think.
Well, I'm so glad. So have you, if you haven't started reading it yet, or have you?
No, because since he's coming on the new podcast, which is so surreal to me, I want to finish prepping some other interviews first and then prep his. So I want to do all of the research on his stuff at once. I'm going to start reading it soon. It's so hard not to. I have been listening to podcast interviews with him, though. It's like a teaser. Oh, I'm so excited. So excited.
Well, good. Keep us posted. Let us know what you think.
Oh, I will. I will. Oh, and for listeners, so that is the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. And you can listen to it on Himalaya, iTunes, all the things. So it's going great. I'm so happy with it.
Well, that's fabulous. I love when things work out.
I know. Before jumping into the questions for today, I was wondering, did you see that new study in cell metabolism?
About ADF?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did you read it?
Yes.
Did you want to talk about it?
I didn't read it like 5 minutes ago, so I'm not prepared to discuss the nuances like right this minute. But I mean, it was right in the middle of the moderator retreat when it was all coming out and I was moving and things were happening. So I like glanced over it, but no, I haven't like analyzed it in depth.
I did. Would you like me to reveal its findings?
Sure. Go ahead. Yeah.
It's really interesting setup and it has a lot of factors about it that I like. So the study is called Alternate Day Fasting Improves Physiological and Molecular Markers of Aging in Healthy Non-Obese Humans. And it was published in Cell Metabolism in August 2019, so very, very recently. And I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but the show notes will be at ifpodcast.com/episode128. So a reason this study is, I think, very important to analyze is so often the fasting studies are performed in overweight individuals rather than like healthy, normal individuals. So this was performed in healthy individuals.
Yeah, I think that's huge too. I remember noticing that.
Yes. And then something else that was huge, and I think this slips under the radar a lot, especially with the ADF studies, which is a longer fast, is a lot of the times in the quote fasting period, they let them have calories. You know, they let them have like up to 500 calories or 500 to 700 calories. This was actually fasting. They didn't have any calories.
I wonder what they drank. I can't remember. Did it say?
So they were allowed to consume water. They were allowed to consume flavored carbonated water. I wonder what that was. And then also unsweetened black or green tea or coffee.
Yeah, I wish they hadn't had the flavored water.
But they could not have diet sodas.
That's good.
And they couldn't have anything else. So almost there. Almost there.
And you know, you wouldn't know that it mattered so much if you hadn't tried it both ways. I've had the flavored water while in the fasted state and it is immediate and huge, but only after you've gotten used to the other way.
Flavored carbonated water. Do you think that was probably like LaCroix? Is that what that is?
Something like that. Yeah.
So the study design was very interesting. So it was actually two studies kind of. So they had 90 participants enrolled in general. And then they had 30 of those participants who had, I'm not sure if it was like they had historically been doing ADF already or they instructed them to, but in any case, they had 30 participants do ADF for over 6 months. And then they compared them in a way to the other 60 people who were like a control group. So comparing them to the 30 people who had been doing ADF for more than 6 months. And then from that control group, the 60 people, they then split that group in half. And they had for 4 weeks, 30 of them did just a normal diet. So that was the new control group. And then 30 of them did 4 weeks of ADF per the guidelines that we just said. So with the ADF, I think they were doing 36-hour fasts And during those fasts, they were consuming no food and then just the beverages we discussed. So the findings that they found were, they found pretty much all across the board improved health biomarkers in the ADF group. So that was nice to see. A big takeaway they saw was that in the ADF group on the fasting days, they were burning more fatty acids, including polyunsaturated fatty acids and beta-hydroxybutyrate. And then on the flip side, their amino acids were going down. So they had less amino acids circulating, and that has been correlated to longevity. So they noted the benefits of that, although they noted that the amino acids probably went down because they were being used by the liver for gluconeogenesis. And then they also saw pathways changed in relation to those cycles. So pathways were changed within the body that encouraged the use of those substrates for fuel. They also saw like a reduced load in the ammonia cycle, which is a toxic byproduct of protein metabolism. So that was nice to see. And then the ADF group lost more fat and they experienced a better fat to lean mass ratio. So they were losing fat, maintaining muscle, not losing muscle like people are so worried about with intermittent fasting. And something I thought was really interesting was that for the ADF group, even on the fed days, they saw like an increase in ketone levels even on the fed days.
Yeah. And I think that's just so interesting to me and important for us to mention, because you hear so much false information about ketones and how unless you're following the keto diet or if you ever eat carbs, for example, you'll never have ketones. I mean, we had somebody in our group one time, this is a while back. I think she was a nurse. And we talked about how you did get into ketosis through fasting. She argued with us like and got so mad and left the group because she's like, there is no way you can get into ketosis if you ever eat a carb ever. And I'm like, I promise that's not true. So the fact that these people were having higher levels of ketones even on eating days is fascinating. It's not what some people think is true. Or she left the group. She was so mad because she did not understand that fasting is also promotes ketosis. She didn't understand that. And anyway, keep going.
You can send her this study. You can track her down.
Well, I don't remember who it was, but if you're listening, which I doubt because she ended up not being a big fan of mine after that whole conversation, I'm sure. If you're listening, check this study out. We would love to have you back in the group, by the way.
And then, so another fascinating finding they found was, so T3, which is the active thyroid hormone, they did find that it went down in the participants practicing ADF. So you would think, oh no, like reduced, you know, thyroid, reduced metabolism. But before you have a freak out moment, two things. A, reduced T3 levels are actually correlated to longevity. So there's that. But secondly, they did not see a decreased resting energy expenditure, i.e. their T3 levels went down, but their metabolism did not drop. So that's huge. Oh, going back to the fat that they lost, they actually lost the most, according to the study, the most lipotoxic type of fat, which I thought was really interesting. So the most toxic type of fat that we harbor, that's the type of fat that was being targeted. And then going back to the fatty acids that were being burned, they did see a decrease in the fatty acids that are associated with the gut microbiome. Isn't that interesting?
So interesting.
Speaking of the gut microbiome, I think Jen will... You might have read this, but I think you'll like the conclusion. I'll read the last conclusion. So at the end, they say, overall, this study puts forward further evidence regarding the modulation of the thyroid axis, which we just discussed, and the cardiovascular system by the periodic depletion of energy intake. I'm actually going to pause there. They did find that in the longer group that had been practicing ADF for over 6 months, that they saw increased cardiovascular factors beyond the 4 weeks of the actual study, positing A, that ADF probably has cardiovascular benefits and that those benefits continue even on a longer timeline. So back to their conclusion, they say ADF and calorie restriction may share large overlaps in their beneficial effects on the human body, with obvious differences regarding the oscillating nature of ADF. Whether these additional features of ADF are increasing the beneficial impact on the health status needs to be studied in future trials. Thus, it will be important to compare ADF and calorie restriction interventions in humans with matched levels of caloric reduction and to further validate preclinical findings. Here it comes. such as the essential role of the gut microbiome and the beneficial effects of periodic fasting. What I find so funny, though, is they barely mentioned the gut microbiome throughout the whole study, except for that one place where they talked about the fatty acids. And then that's like their conclusion. I just thought that was so interesting.
I wonder if they're like, oh, we forgot to really talk about that. We'll just throw it in here. I don't know. But yeah, there's so many benefits beyond just that you're eating less calories and the calorie restriction. You know, we look back to research that came out earlier this year out of Japan, when they found that as the fast, they measured someone, was it 52 hours or a group of people, 52 hours, I can't remember, but they measured all the things that ramped up and they found all these things that were going on in the body that they're like, wow, we didn't even know that was happening. So I do think that the fasting, we're going to find more and more. The more they research actual fasting, the more they realize these things are turned on with the fast.
Yes, exactly. So Dr. Peter Attia, who had David Sinclair on his podcast yesterday, that's what I was listening to. That was an amazing episode, by the way. I'll put a link to it in the Intermittent Fasting Podcast Stuff We Like playlist on Himalaya, on the Himalaya app. So you can check that out. He did a deconstruction of this study and he did really like it. But he did note, he pointed out some odd things. He said, for example, that for the people that practice for 6 months, they say that they don't have access to their baseline information, which is like very strange. So there's like a huge lack of information regarding that group.
Well, for example, I don't have baseline information from before I started intermittent fasting. I don't know what changed for me.
No. Like from when they started the trial.
Oh, they didn't take any data from them?
They said they do not have access to the baseline values of the long-term ADF cohort.
To me, it sounds like that means that they don't know what happened before they started, which was at least six months prior to this study. That's the way I interpret that. Maybe I'm interpreting it incorrectly.
No, that actually might be right. That would make sense.
Yeah, because of course they had access to them when they started this part of it, but they've been doing it for so long, they didn't have baseline data from before.
Yeah, I'm unclear if they, does it sound like they found people who had already been doing ADF?
That's my hunch. Like if somebody came into our intermittent fasting support group and said, hey, we're trying to find people who have been doing this a long time to compare you to people who are just starting, who would like to volunteer for this study? By the way, we would love to do that. I've got a giant pool of about 250,000 Facebook support members that could help you out. But anyway.
You should email Peter. I'm not even kidding, because he sent out on his email list, he was talking about this study. And then the last sentence he said was, if readers have some light to shed on the issues above, which is the way he's interpreting that information, he said, please send it my way. I'm actually going to email him and say maybe that's what it was. Something he also pointed out was he thinks some of the numbers don't add up in some of the tables that they provided, which I thought about going and looking at, but I pulled them up and they're really complicated. And I was like, I'll just, okay. But in any case, it's really nice to see these types of studies being performed. And I think there'll be probably more and more in the future, hopefully.
Yeah, I think so too. There's so much interest and I love that it's happening and that we're seeing the positive benefits. So much of the criticism that we hear about intermittent fasting is, yeah, a lot of the studies were done with animals. And so we have to have things with humans before we can draw some of these same conclusions. But it's a whole lot more difficult to study humans than it is to study animals for so many reasons.
So, so true. Something personally that I experimented with recently that I found really fascinating. So I've been experimenting just with different macronutrients and ketogenic approaches and stuff like that. So I started experimenting with MCT oil during my eating window, not during the fast, and pretty high doses, just out of curiosity. And I hadn't had it in quite a while. I did it one day. And this was actually the C8 version, which is the type of MCT that is most rapidly converted to ketones. And so I did it one night and I did a ton of it. And within like an hour, I mean like pure ketones, like from my breath. I mean, I can't even, it was just like ketones were like coming out of my whole body so intensely. Like, and it's hard unless you've had the MCT oil and experienced this, it might be hard to relate to, but it was like just very, very like ketones were clearly being excreted way faster than my body was dealing with them. Interestingly, the next day I ate pretty much the same thing, same amount of MCT oil, didn't have that barely at all. So it's like, is that how fast those pathways are regulated to process the ketones? Does that make sense? I wonder how fast, just for people in general, that change happens. And I don't know the answer. Because, you know, we often get questions about keto breath and people get stressed if they don't have the keto breath. But we say that, no, it means most likely your body is using the ketones rather than excreting them. Because when they're being excreted, that's because there's an overabundance. But I just found it fascinating as a personal anecdote that clearly my body adapted like that quickly, like within a day, to going from excreting all of this excess ketones to me not sensing that at all. Yeah, it was just an N of one experiment.
Yeah, it is fascinating when you change something up and see what happens.
Yep. All right. Shall we jump into our questions for today?
Yes, let's get started. We have a follow-up that I'm really excited about.
All right. So to start things off, we have a follow-up from Taylor. And the subject is pregnant story from Delay Don't Deny group. And Taylor says, "Hi, Jen and Melanie. I recently posted in Jen's Facebook group, but wanted to send a follow-up to an email I sent you guys on April 12th. I don't remember which episode of the podcast you read it on. However, I'm going to blame pregnancy brain on that one. Spoiler alert. In my first email, I thanked you both tremendously because I had finally gotten a positive ovulation test. Backstory was that I had been diagnosed PCOS, which we know is a blanket diagnosis for elevated testosterone and issues with insulin resistance. I'm just going to pause right there really quickly. I will say, Jen, that is something I've been researching recently about PCOS, is that it is likely related to insulin resistance, which is fascinating. But back to Taylor's email, she says, "But upon further testing, found out I was not actually ovulating despite having normal periods. My husband and I knew we wanted to try for kids in the near future, so obviously this brought on some concern. My doctor didn't have much to say as for what to do next, so I researched on my own and found Jen's book and this podcast. Fast forward roughly 5 months. I've been doing one meal a day with clean fast religiously, averaging 20 to 22 hours. IF has changed my body and health immensely, and we're both ready to start officially trying for a baby. We got pregnant on the first try." That's in all caps, and congratulations, Taylor. She says, "Funnily enough, I knew right away something was off because I had become so in tune with my body through IF. I was fasting easily and doing one meal a day for so long that when I suddenly became absolutely unable, I say that with a ton of sincerity, I literally could not physically make it past 13 hours due to hunger. I knew then I was pregnant. I didn't even get a positive on a pee test for 4 more days after that, but I knew. I needed a bacon, egg, and cheese like nobody's business. I'm blown away, but I won't say I'm surprised. That's the magic of IF. I had a lot of doubters saying that intermittent fasting was a fad diet, and I truly hope when I'm able to share our story to everyone that it opens several eyes. Thank you again for sharing your knowledge of fasting with the world, Jen and Melanie. I owe a great deal of gratitude to you both for this tiny miracle. I'm sadly fasting behind, but I know that I'll be back once I'm finished breastfeeding. P.S. I would love to know how many IF babies there are."
Isn't that thrilling? I loved reading this. I mean, we just got it. She just sent it in. And it's just thrilling to see. Dr. Cecily Ganhart, she's an OBGYN. I think she's from Kansas City. I had her on Intermittent Fasting Stories, maybe episode 31. I was looking at it for someone today earlier, so I think it's sticking in my head. But anyway, she uses intermittent fasting with her patients who have PCOS. And she said the same thing. She's finding so many of these women are becoming pregnant after so long of trying. And it's just pretty amazing. Fasting does a great job keeping the insulin low. And so I'm not even sure that Taylor changed what she was eating. You know, a lot of women with PCOS also find that eating a more keto style or a low carb style helps them get the insulin down even lower. But I'm not certain that Taylor did that. So maybe it was just fasting. So congratulations. And it's absolutely thrilling. You know, there's hope.
Yeah, no, I love this so much. And yeah, just to reiterate everything you said, it reminds me as well our interview we had like with Dr. Annika Becca. Because remember, she reversed early menopause with her. I mean, it wasn't just intermittent fasting. It was an alkalinizing keto diet, but she's a big proponent of fasting as well. She's actually, I'm so excited. She's this week's episode of my new podcast.
Oh, that's so exciting. You know, for all the naysayers out there who say that intermittent fasting affects women's fertility, we can say it does in a positive way.
Or it can.
Right. Or it can. It can. But there's so many, you know, blog posts in the world where people are like, women shouldn't do it. And here we go.
Yeah. The more and more I research, the more I think just like the insulin issue is so, so huge. And I just think intermittent fasting is such a way to address that. And I think people get so caught up thinking insulin is all just about low carb when we have insulin. We need insulin sensitivity, and it's there to deal with carbs, which are okay to eat and which are healthy and beneficial. We just need to make sure that insulin is doing its job when we're eating, when it should be, and it's not being released all the time.
Right. Insulin is not bad. Hyperinsulinemia is bad.
Yeah. The more and more I research, the more I think I'm just realizing that hyperinsulinemia has a lot of problems. And we actually had a question about it later, but I don't think we're going to get to it. So maybe next week we can talk more about that.
That's a good, we'll save it. We'll get to it then. All right. We're ready for another one. And this is from Mags. And the subject is recommendation. Dear Melanie and Jen, while I've been listening to your podcast for almost a year now, this is the first time I'm writing and it's to thank you. Your recommendation to listen to Never Binge Again has had an enormous impact on my struggles with my intermittent fasting journey, as well as my relationship with food in general. I knew that IF was one of the answers to my prayers, but there was definitely something missing. When I started, I committed to a year of trial and error. I have a history of a compulsive overeating disorder that I've been in recovery from for about 20 years, so I have a deep understanding and trust in the slow recovery. I'm not in any rush, but since starting IF in December, my mind has been doing a number on me. I knew that there was a voice in there working against me, but personifying it, naming it, and gaining a deeper understanding of how it operates has brought me so much clarity, peace, and hope this week. I love how life works. I was talking with a friend about this voice in my head that was at the root of my struggles with eating. And within a week, the universe led me to a compassionate and thorough understanding of how I can get help for my tired, discouraged spirit. I have so much gratitude for you both. This book feels like another corner piece to my health and well-being puzzle, and I have you to thank for filling in those pieces for me. Best of luck with all of the exciting things you're both doing. I'm always cheering you on from my iPad. Fondly, Mags. I loved that so much.
I love that too. And that's so wonderful. And I think that is something about intermittent fasting. Like it has all the physical benefits. And I think one of the great things is that since it does make you more in tune with your body, kind of like Taylor was saying, it gives you the power in a way to also tackle the mindset issue associated with it. Because I think it can be really hard to tackle like mindset and your perspective, and especially like addiction surrounding food in your mind when you are suffering the physical addiction. So it's like with intermittent fasting, it helps you so much physically. And then if there is like a deeper like psychological issue, I think it really helps with that as well. She mentioned the Never Binge Again book. And Jen, I keep recommending this book to everybody. I wish it was called something different because I want to recommend it to so many people, but when I recommend it, it sounds like I'm saying that, oh, you're a binge eater, read this, which is not, I wish there was like another version that was the exact same book, but it was called like, Never Worry About Food Cravings or Addictions or Problems Again, you know, like something that was a little bit less intense. But basically, it just talks about how the voice in our head that often drives us to overeat or consume things that we know probably won't serve our body in the long term, why that happens and where that's coming from an evolutionary perspective and how to deal with it. Basically, the thesis of the book, and this sounds so simple, but the way to deal with it is to just not engage with it. So it's a very freeing approach because it doesn't require working through your history or like justifying or overthinking things. It's more just like identifying what
is you and what is not you and how to make that work for you. And I think it can help. I think especially with people who may struggle with intermittent fasting, with overeating in their eating window, who find that they need to just keep eating, either out of habit or that something just tells them to eat, or if they're struggling with cravings for certain foods, I think this book can be really, really helpful. So I've been prepping for, remember how we had Elle Russ on our podcast about the thyroid? She's another huge female fan of fasting. That was great. So I'm bringing her on my new podcast, and I've been reading her book, The Paleo Thyroid Solution, and she has a quote from Loretta Graziano Bruning, who's author of Habits of a Happy Brain. I haven't read that. Have you read that, Jen?
I have not. I have like had no time to read anything.
I mean, I don't know if this is a new book or not. So she's talking about stress and cortisol and everything. And she says, when your cortisol surges, you respond by noticing what it's paired with. It could be low blood sugar or the scent of danger or social isolation. Life experience builds myriad circuits that light up when your cortisol turns on. Sometimes the solution is obvious, like pulling your hand off a hot stove. But often you're not sure what triggered the alarm. You don't know how to make it stop, yet it feels like something awful will happen if you don't do something immediately. For example, let's say you have a bad feeling about your boss while sitting at your desk in your office. You want to make that feeling go away because cortisol annoys you until you do something to make it stop. But you're not sure what started it or how you can relieve it. You do know from life experience that donuts make you feel good. Donuts trigger happy chemicals because fat and sugar are scarce in nature. The good feeling distracts you from the bad feeling, which makes it seem like the threat is gone for the moment that you are eating the donut. Consciously, you know the donut hasn't fixed your problems, but happy chemicals are molecules that pave a neural pathway. The next time you feel bad about your boss, electricity trickles to the thought of eating a donut. If you eat one, you build a connection. You still know the donut doesn't solve your problem and in fact can make it worse, but going with the flow gives you a sense of safety for that moment. When the do something feeling strikes, your brain builds the idea that eating a donut is doing something. I thought that was really, really interesting, just speaking to how we do form these neural circuits surrounding food and associating them, that it goes beyond just food addiction and wanting sugar or fat or wanting to overeat, that it is tying into something deeper, our stress response, a feeling of safety. So it is providing something to us therapeutically in a way, but sadly, we often form the connection to something that could be hindering us in the long term, you know, be that a food that doesn't suit you, or overeating in your eating window. So it's so nuanced and so in depth.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm just so grateful to hear that it's helped her find that piece of the puzzle.
All right. So up next, we have something also motivating and positive. This comes from Yolanda, and the subject is the power of appetite correction. And Yolanda says, "Hi, Jen and Melanie. I want to thank you both for changing my life. I had a 25-year binge eating problem that I've successfully been able to control since I started intermittent fasting 6 months ago. I eat Jen's version of one meal a day, sorry, Melanie, and would have never imagined that I could get my brain and my body to be on the same page again. I've tried numerous things over the year, but nothing ever took away the urge to binge. When I started intermittent fasting, it was as if someone flipped the switch back on that controlled my satiety signals. I don't count calories, follow macros, or deny myself of anything unless my body tells me to. I eat when I'm hungry and stop when I'm full. The end. I have zero desire to binge. I'm so grateful for both of you. Thank you so much for all of your hard work."
I love it. Her body has gotten back in tune with her natural appetite signals. That is our goal, and that's fantastic. So thank you for sharing, Yolanda.
Yeah, I love it. I've been researching the work of Dr. Pompa recently, and I need to verify this. I don't have studies to back this up, but he did say that a lot of this does go back to the insulin like we were talking about. And he was saying that insulin receptors that have been damaged from, you know, like constantly eating or a carbohydrate approach that is too high for the individual or whatever it may be, that they can regenerate within 5 days or after 5 days. Like it takes 5 days and then they'll start regenerating. I need to verify that, but that would be very motivating. All right. Shall we squeeze in one more question before we go?
All right. Here we go. From Migs, subject coffee. "I've been IF for just over a month. Before I started, though, I was 252 pounds and now 233. I supplemented with two meal shakes and a great dinner during my window, which is 16:8. I'm a mail carrier who walks just over 10 miles a day, 5 days a week. My question is, recently, black coffee in the morning is making me hungry. Should I stop it if it makes me hungry or just power through it? Doesn't the hunger cause increased insulin? Thank you.
I'm actually dying to hear what you're going to say, Jen.
The reason you're hungry probably, Migs, is not the coffee. It's because you're only a month in and your body is still adjusting to intermittent fasting. You're getting to the bottom of your glycogen stores. Your body is going through this. It's just too new for you to start trying to think about, oh, is this coffee making me hungrier? You're going through the adjustment phase. Also, hunger doesn't cause increased insulin. You've got the cause and the effect backwards. And really, this is not a foolproof way of judging whether your body has released insulin or not. I mean, it can. Let's say you're somebody who has a normal blood glucose level, like me. You know, I'm in the fast. I've been fasting a long time. My blood glucose level is normal and stable. Then I consume a little bit of something that causes my body to release insulin. Insulin does its job. It ushers blood glucose out of my blood. Then my blood sugar crashes and my body's like, eat. I might feel shaky. I'm starving. I need to eat. I've had that happen to me before. And so that's though because my blood glucose was at a normal level and then the insulin release caused my blood sugar to then be lower than it should be. Now, let's say you're somebody who has really high levels of blood glucose. Maybe you're pre-diabetic. Maybe you have type 2 diabetes. You've got really, really high blood glucose levels. And now you have something. Your body releases insulin. Your blood glucose lowers, but it doesn't lower enough for you to suddenly feel shaky because your blood glucose is lower, but fine. It's at a good level, even though it's lower than it was before. You might not feel hungry. So the whole, it didn't make me hungry, is not a good test for whether you released insulin or not. It can. If your body does release insulin and you get that hungry, shaky feeling, that's probably the sign that it happened. But as far as you being hungry after coffee, I really bet it's just your body with the adjustment period. And it could just be your stomach is growling, which is a mechanical action, not actual, you know, hungry. When I have an insulin response, it is I'm shaky, I'm starving, I have to eat immediately. It's very different than just, oh, there was a stomach rumble. But hunger doesn't cause increased insulin. No, that was the way that Migs phrased it.
Yeah, I think that's really important to point out. Like, hunger is a sign of, the other way around, like you said.
Right. It was the cause and effect were backwards.
It kind of reminds me, I've been doing a lot of research actually on stevia. Guys, if I've realized one thing from it, please do not sweeten anything with stevia during your fast. Please do not. It reminded me of this because they find that it seems to increase insulin release, which lowers blood sugar. So it can be posited as, you know, an anti-diabetic agent that would help insulin levels. If you have high blood sugar, if you're fasting and then you have that during the fast, and then that's going to release insulin, lower your blood sugar, make you starving, mess with insulin levels. It just seems like a very, very bad idea.
Yeah, that confuses a lot of people. They're like, well, I read that it lowers your blood glucose levels, so isn't that a good thing? Well, not if the reason it lowered your blood glucose levels is because you released insulin. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, my takeaway, it seems like if you have it, you would want to have it with something sweet to lower the effects of the blood sugar from that. Like, I feel like it would be more beneficial to tinker with it in your eating window. But from what I've been reading, I'm just like, please, this seems like the worst thing you could have during fasting. So my thoughts for Migs was, I was thinking likely that the coffee could be making you hungry, similar to what we've been talking about, because I mean, there are a few different things it could be doing. It could be, you know, depleting liver glycogen and creating a stress response. It basically could be affecting somehow your stress system and that being the mechanism for your hunger. But I think the takeaway, because her question is, should I stop it if it makes me hungry or just power through? I guess the question is, why are you drinking it? I mean, I'm assuming she drinks it for the energy boost, but it's making her hungry. So what practical answer would you give her, Jen, for Like, do you think she should keep drinking it? Should she try decaf? What would you encourage for a listener who is...
I mean, if you suspect black coffee is making you miserably hungry to the point that you're having trouble fasting, there's only one thing to do, and that is experiment with leaving it out, right? You try leaving it out, see what happens, give yourself a few days to get over the caffeine withdrawals that you're probably going to experience, and then see if you're more hungry or less hungry without it. And that's really the only way to know for sure.
True. You could also try something like switching to tea, green tea, seeing if that has the same effect.
You certainly could, because that would have the caffeine. I do want to point something out. Somebody in the group was talking just yesterday about how she's so nauseous during the fast. She's just queasy, queasy, queasy. She'd been fasting for this certain amount of time. And why is she so nauseous? And, you know, we say if you're nauseous or shaky, you should eat. But I kept asking her questions. She said that she had just started drinking green tea, which is perfectly fine during the fast. But green tea makes me nauseous on an empty stomach as well. So just a little FYI, if you're not used to drinking tea and you suddenly start drinking tea and now you're feeling queasy, it's the tea.
Or you might be great with it. Just totally depends.
Right. You might be. But I just wanted to throw that out there because she was like, why am I so queasy? And I was trying to figure it out. And I'm pretty sure it was probably the tea.
Although now I hope people don't get anticipatory nausea now. I've been reading that Joe Dispenza's You're the Placebo.
Yep, I've got it.
Oh, it's so, so good. The part I just read was about patients who get anticipatory nausea upon certain medical procedures, and it's completely just conditioned. Like, it doesn't have any relationship to what's actually happening. The power of the mind is just insane. Do you want to hear one really quick study and then we can end that they did? This blew my mind. They had 13 children who are allergic to poison ivy. So on one arm, they put actual poison ivy, but they told the children that it was not poison ivy, that they weren't allergic to it. On the other arm, they put not poison ivy, but they told the children it was poison ivy. So on the arm where the children thought it was poison ivy, but it wasn't. It was only 13, but still every single child broke out in a rash. Isn't that crazy? Even though they weren't allergic to it. And then on the other arm where it actually was poison ivy, but they thought it wasn't, 11 of them did not break out. Only 2 did. Isn't that crazy? I mean, power of the mind. So yep. Takeaways for this episode, power of fasting, power of the mind. You got this. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, I really think that the thoughts you tell yourself are so important. You know, if you're telling yourself, well, I'll try intermittent fasting, but it probably won't work for me. Well, you've already told yourself that. Or I'll try it, but it's going to be hard. Or I'm going to try it and I'll probably just binge. I mean, your brain is powerful. Tell yourself positive things.
Yeah. Tell yourself it's going to be amazing. Change your life. All right. So a few things for listeners before we go. We are a Himalaya partnered show. And if you follow us in the Himalaya app, you will get early access to our podcast 24 hours in advance. So definitely check that out. If you'd like to submit your own questions for the podcast, you can directly email questions at ifpodcast.com, or you can go to ifpodcast.com and you can submit questions there. The show notes, like I said, will be at ifpodcast.com/episode128. And then you can follow us on Instagram. We are the IF Podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter. We are the IF Pod. All right. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. Anything from you, Jen, before we go? Are you going to go recover from all of the craziness?
Yep. I'm all recovered, but I still need a lot of unpacking. This house has so many bookshelves. I don't have enough books. I thought I had a lot of books.
That's a wonderful problem to have.
Like, I need to go count how many bookshelves are in this house. It's crazy. I'm really thrilled. All the books I ever got rid of, now I'm regretting.
Wow. That's amazing. All right. Well, I will talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you then.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember that everything discussed on the show is not medical advice. We're not doctors. You can also check out our other podcasts, Intermittent Fasting Stories and the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Theme music was composed by Leland Cox. See you next week.